This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We've put out a couple of hours digitally, as we do most days. The local hour, you could check it out. We spent the entire time ripping Stugatz. Also, the Big Suey has a controversial figure on it again, a controversial guy who is doing sports radio exceptionally well. We are joined by Shane Bacalata in the Big Suey. So if you want to check those things out, feel free to. That is the voice of Stugatz. And we have not figured out how to do this correctly because Stugatz just arrived here. When I said we have been doing the 2 hours, it did not involve Stugatz because we believe that there are a web of lies here that Stugatz is telling. We also believe that Stugatz isn't actually watching any of these playoff games, that he's just sort of watching some highlights or listening to the morning show on the way in. And so how do we want to address some of this stuff with Stugatz? Because Stugatz just came in here and he just started with the details of all the things he was doing that none of us believe he was doing. Now, everyone here knows that Stugatz just makes a series of excuses to camouflage his laziness.
I think at the heart of it is, look, he showed up just before the national radio show. So there was a very clear cutoff to the conversation where he's like, I got to go.
It's very important that I go now.
And I think the resentment is building from, well, the local hour is important too. But right. You didn't wrap up that conversation for the local hour.
I wasn't expecting it. I got a call while I was driving in to do the local hour or the Big Suey, whichever one you guys did this morning. And I had to take that call.
We did both without you.
I prioritized. I'm sorry.
This was supposed to be over on Tuesday, because if you listen to Tuesday's post-game show, that was going to be decision day for your daughter, Rachel. Now this has been extended. No, I know what's coming. A bunch of excuses. By the way, on the post-game show today, an exclusive interview with Stan Van Gundy.
Chris, I see you're turning even a brighter shade of red. This always makes you deeply uncomfortable. You just want everyone to get along and everyone to like each other, and you're just red.
Who doesn't?
Under normal circumstances. Right. Do you have anything here? Do you want to quiz Stugatz on some of the... I'll watch his fingers so he doesn't type up box scores or anything. Do you want to quiz Stugatz on some details from the games yesterday to see if indeed he was watching or he's just sort of skimming stuff? Why are you picking up your phone? Put everything down, Stugatz.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Big tax was coming in.
Okay. Chris, do you want to ask him anything from the games yesterday to test whether Stugatz has been watching any of this?
Stugatz is a pro's pro, Dan. So if I ask him questions, he's probably already learned up and watched what happened in these games. So I feel like we need to go about this a different way. But I'm just smiling, man. Stugatz has this ability to, with everything you just said, I almost agree with all of it, but I still love him more, and I just want to hang out with him.
Well, what are the kinds of questions that I can be asking him that would test his knowledge? I don't expect you necessarily to know the name of the guy who hit the Toronto game winner, because it's not the most common of names.
OG or something like that? Abdanabi or something? He had a big three to win the game for the Raptors and save their season Boston.
It is not.
See what I told you? Pro's pro.
It is not. Yeah. Ala Abdul-Nabi.
Okay. He played at Duke, right?
Just go OG.
Okay.
Tell us everything you know about the inbound.
I know the inbound pass went to, I think, Kyle Lowry. There was some controversy with the inbound pass. Eventually.
He's faking it, Chris. You see, he's faking it.
He's faking
Chris,
it.
He's faking it. I got to be honest.
I know nothing about the inbound pass. Other than there was controversy.
There was no controversy.
That it was a clean inbound pass.
You're lying. You don't know what happened on the inbound pass.
I didn't watch the game. I mean, listen, I am not. You're not going to sit there and have me ask Raptors Celtics when I'm trying to wrap up a deal for my daughter to go to college.
It's just not happening. Hours of the day, though? How does this excuse apply for every waking moment?
She's a big-time recruit. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? Someone's got to talk finances, and that someone is me.
The bare minimum that you can do is take 5 minutes to see how a game ended.
Well, like, OG.
Okay, you gave us... Scott, you couldn't have given us less information, and you invented a controversy that didn't exist. What is the controversy that you imagine regarding the inbound? Go ahead. Tell me what you imagine to be the controversy of the inbound.
This is the only thing that happened. You asked me about an inbound pass, which no one would ever ask me about. I mean, when does anyone ever ask about an inbound pass? They're benign.
It's the greatest inbound pass in the history of inbound passes.
Fair enough. Totally understand that. But I had to guess one of two ways. The greatest inbound pass in the history of inbound passes or controversy.
Let me do this another way, okay? Even though he's already admitted the lie that he wasn't watching any of it.
Oh, yeah.
What happened? The bare minimum, thank you, well put, just some random muttering.
Maybe some of it.
This is how your career is going to end whenever it does end, with you just going blah, 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 blah. The maximum laziness that you can have as someone who works in sports for a living is tell me something that happened in the last 5 seconds of that game. Tell me something.
Of the Raptors game.
Of the Raptors-Celtics game, what happened in the last... You don't have to pay attention to anything but the last 5 seconds of a basketball game. Mm-hmm. Tell me what the situation was. Tell me what happened. Boston has the ball and what?
Boston has the ball. Bad turnover, okay? Raptors are down 2. They need a 3 to save their season. Inbound pass, the greatest inbound pass in the history of inbound passes to OG, who hits a 3, game over, Raptor season.
All right, so this...
Nailed it?
Let's try it again. What is happening with 5 seconds left in the basketball game between Boston and Toronto? What's the score? What's happening?
I think it's 102, maybe 103, 101. I'm not looking at anything right now. I know Boston is up 2, okay?
Okay, they're not up 2 because game is...
Well, Toronto needed a 3 to win
Yeah,
though,
but
right?
The game is tied. Boston has the ball.
Oh, so Boston hits a 2.
Well,
and then,
thank you, but how and what happened?
Who hits it?
Who hit the 2? I believe it was Jason Tatum, I believe, who hit the 2.
You think that was one of his 5 makes on the
night?
Okay,
yeah. Stugatz, listen.
I'm guessing the best guy. I mean, I could go to the box score, but I wanted to do this honest with you guys.
All right, right? Well.
Turning over a new leaf.
This is where you choose to be honest. Interesting timing. All right, what you missed in the last 5 seconds of the game is a paid professional who doesn't have to and do anything except the bare minimum of pay the attention to the last 5 seconds of a game.
Yeah.
Is Kemba Walker making one of the greatest passes you will ever see to get an easy shot in that situation that no one gets in a tie game right at the rim?
Final 5 seconds, Dan. Kemba time.
And then he makes it, and it's...
Cardiac Kemba.
0.5 seconds left in the game. And now Nick Nurse calls a play that he learned from Hubie Brown. And the third option in the corner is the aforementioned Abdul Nabi.
A big shot.
And what ended up happening is that they inbound Kyle Lowry, who says he has balls of steel, inbounded over the 7'5" Taco Fall, who played 0.5 seconds in the game and was -3.
That's what you have him for, though, defend that inbound pass.
Okay, but he didn't defend it because Kyle Lowry says...
Terrible job at a taco.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. Terrible job at a taco.
Big shot Abu Dhabi. I mean...
Stugatz, if you would have just said the name Taco Fall 5 minutes ago, you would have been like, all right, you watched it. We're good.
Chris,
that was the... Chris,
but he went controversy.
I got to be honest. I enjoyed the last 5 minutes.
Chris, he went controversy. The controversial inbound is what he went.
Hold that thought. Let's sell some ads.
I could have swore I saw something with controversy, inbounds pass, and I don't know.
And we, just skimming the notes and reading them poorly. Ladies and gentlemen, Stugatz, the worst at this. Is there a better name that a guy can have making that shot, a real name, than OG? Is there a name throughout history that I could give you?
Big Shot Bob.
That's not a name. OG is his initials, and he hadn't taken a shot for 24 minutes. He hadn't taken any kind of shot, and then he was the third option on a Taco Fall inbound. Put it on the poll, please, Chris, at Lebatard Show. Mistake I made earlier. Do you ever confuse Taco Fall and Bowl Bowl? Is this something that you ever do? It's something that's been happening to me on television. It's happened like 4 times on Highly Questionable where I keep confusing Taco Fall with Bowl Bowl, even though they're not really that similar in that Bowl Bowl has a well-rounded, versatile game while being a skinny, you know, pogo stick. And Taco Fall is just, 7'5" and a bit of a you know, circus freak that Celtics fans cheer for, but that doesn't do much of anything.
And when you combine the two, you get one of Dan's favorite things in the world, a Taco Bowl.
That is correct. I do. A Taco Bowl is how I order it. I order it so they bring me the double bowl, the double Taco Bowl. I wanted to get into the idea, though, of what is happening with Tom Haberstroh. He's going to join us at 10:30 Eastern to talk about what's happening with Giannis Antetokounmpo, because I don't think, Stugatz, for as much as you like to mock these guys for mental frailty in playoff moments, I think that what's happening with him isn't a mental frailty. I think it's how he's being defended, and I'm not sure how you alter how he's being defended. So we're going to talk to, like, I don't know what the adjustments can be. I mean, I suppose you can put him in the pick and roll more, but anyone who's questioned this Milwaukee team was only doing so because they were saying the playoffs should slow down. You get into half court offense, and there is where Giannis can't just do his, just, you know, the Ben Simmons move of he gathers ahead of steam and you can't do anything about it because he's just dunking. That's regular season basketball.
Sure.
That is not postseason basketball. Like, postseason, everything gets ratcheted up to a more hostile defensive place. And so we will talk to Haberstroh about that. But the first thing I wanted to do, Stephen A. Smith got it wrong, man. He is howling about Steve Nash being hired by the Brooklyn Nets at a volume that is too high, even as you can wonder why black assistant coaches might look at that job and say, really, someone with no experience is getting the power in the organization. That is something that happens a lot, black or white, with point guards who are guys who are considered controllers of the game, guys who think the game, coaches on the court during their careers, black or white. Isaiah Thomas got some of that. There are Jason Kidd gets some of that. There are plenty of guys at that position specifically, and it doesn't matter whether they're white or black, who get to skip the line without having any experience.
Mark Jackson, Derek Fisher. I mean, there have been plenty of floor generals who have gotten head coaching jobs.
Yeah, those without any experience. I would say, you remember me doing this, right? I did this with Magic Johnson, and I did it with John Lynch. Those are different kinds of jobs, and you have to be committed to them, and there are things that you have to learn en route to them. John Elway was given a job with a lot of power, and not just power, but I'm talking about the John Lynch-specific job. It's very rare for somebody to not have any training whatsoever and all of a sudden become the general manager of an NFL team, which is an all-encompassing job. Those are the times that you will hear me complain about the skipping in line. I actually understand this Steve Nash hire, even as someone who would say, really, that's what we're going to do? No experience at all? I understand why two mercurial stars, you might want to reach them with a guy who is, you know, won two MVPs.
But of course, you also understand why, and we don't know if this is the case, but Jock Vaughn, who is now the assistant head coach, who has wanted to be a head coach his entire life, Jock Vaughn is being prevented of being a head coach because they're going with Steve Nash. You would understand why he would be upset, right? Of course.
Now, Stephen A. was on the morning show this morning, and he clarified a little bit, saying that his point was his issues weren't with Marks or Nash in, like, specifically, but the process in general. So he did clarify a little bit.
Understood, but I think he clarified after realizing that Woj put out that, hey, this happens a lot, black and white. This happens, like, it's not... You're not getting on television and saying this when Derek Fisher is hired, when Jason Kidd is hired, when Isaiah Thomas is hired. In fact, I don't know what Stephen A. Smith's opinion was on Isaiah Thomas being hired with no experience, but my guess would be, as a Knicks fan, that he would have embraced that like Knicks fans were embracing it.
Well, I mean, there was a point where the Knicks were trying to choose between Steve Kerr and Derek Fisher, two guys that didn't have any previous coaching experience, right. And this has actually happened in Brooklyn before. Jason Kidd is a person of color. He was given that job with no prior experience, and he was actually one of the final candidates to be a Brooklyn head coach again.
They just seem like jobs that you should have to climb the ladder for, right? They do. I mean, NBA head coaching jobs, NFL general manager jobs, it does feel like you should probably have some experience and kind of wait your turn.
But I think the day is dead now. As stars get more and more powerful, as you arrive in a place where the head coach's job is to be your ally, not your boss, as you arrive in a place where these guys have so much power as Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving that after losses, they should make Steve Nash run the sprints because of the amount of power that is changing in that sport, you go get a guy perhaps that people are going to respect because they've seen him play recently, as opposed to, you know, Nick Nurse. Or I'm going to talk with Stan Van Gundy about this in the post game show, because I'm curious what he thinks of the idea of a guy just moving into a spot with no experience.
Well, they're clearly prioritizing someone that could be more of a therapist than a tactician. You have two of the most brilliant offensive players in the NBA, in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and their past is littered with high-profile incidents of not getting along with teammates, being misunderstood, being mercurial players. And Steve Nash has a track record when he was a player of connecting to people you wouldn't expect. So they wanted someone that was a floor general and someone that could reach their players, because these two players historically have been difficult to reach.
Hold that thought. Let's sell some ads.
Want to promote today's post-game show featuring Stan Van Gundy, you guys, because usually the post-game show is end of the show banter amongst the cast. However, this time, Stan Van Gundy is going to give you some X's and O's. They took an hour away from the show, right? So we give you basketball analysis with one of the most high-profile color commentators in the game, Stan Van Gundy, in the post-game show.
All right, he's the host of the Haber Show podcast, NBC Sports NBA Insider. We love his information. I hope you guys noticed the show within the show that Mike is layering in musically. We like to play around with music around here. And Tom Haberstroh famously has a song in his honor. We will get to it in a moment. But first, I'm sorry, Christine Lisi, for interrupting you.
Dan, and finally, Nicolas Cage has been cast as a vodka-drinking, flash-dance-loving dragon in High Fire for Amazon. The series is described as a gritty crime thriller with doses of magical realism. How about that?
Yeah, thank you, Christine. We appreciate it. All of his movies should be, I am trying to get away from those tax problems. Every last one of them. He makes an alarming number of movies. It's jarring how often you will see Nicolas Cage show up, because he's got to pay for those pirate skulls.
Yeah, I hope you've cleared out your plans for the weekend, because Primal has made its way to streaming platforms. And Primal, of course, the role that he was born to play. A movie in which Nicolas Cage plays a big game hunter that is trapped on a boat with one of the world's most dangerous criminals, who escapes custody and unlocks cages featuring some of the most dangerous animals on the planet.
Yes.
Only one person is equipped to hunt down these animals that are standing in the way of capturing this felon, and that's Nicolas Cage.
That's correct. I thought you were going to say, and that's Tom Haberstroh. Let's give him his intro here, his Haberstroh music. He is the host of the Haber Show podcast, NBC Sports, NBA Insider. That is a banger. We all dance around when we play that. Haberstroh, thank you for joining us. What can the Bucks do differently with Giannis offensively so it doesn't look the way that it's looked the first two games?
Can they sign Malcolm Brogdon?
Is that where they are?
That's where they are, Dan. I mean, you look at this, Malcolm Brogdon, what he did against the Miami Heat, 21 points a game, 10 assists. You don't think they could use a Malcolm Brogdon to get into the teeth of the Heat defense like he did last series? I know they got swept.
But isn't that what Bledsoe's supposed to be there for?
Yes, but he's playing on one leg right now. So they traded a first-round pick to get Bledsoe, and then they extended him last year, and they decided to give that money to him instead of Malcolm Brogdon, who I think Mike Ryan is like the biggest Malcolm Brogdon fan on the planet, and rightfully so. The guy was 50-40-90 last year and actually could make some plays off the dribble to relieve some of the pressure from Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo. And what I think is happening here is that the offense gets stagnant. They don't have that third lever consistently to get buckets when they need it. And I think Malcolm Brogdon, the fact that they did not extend or give him that contract and let Indiana take him this last summer, is a huge story that I don't think is getting enough play right now, because when it happened, everyone was like, I mean, I get it. They just won 60 games. Maybe they don't need Malcolm Brogdon. But if things go south and they don't win, at least get into the Eastern Conference Finals and win the title, that's going to be a big move for them, is that they just decided, hey, we don't want to pay the luxury tax this season, and we're going to let Indiana sign him for $88 million.
Well, that's how you lose him. That's how you end up losing a guy who's going to get blamed if they don't get out of the second round and he ends up in Miami. Those are the kinds of moves that end up losing, a franchise type of player. But, Tom, it can't be second round of the playoffs. You're MVP of the league, and we're longing for Malcolm Brogdon. Like, he's the MVP of the league, Tom.
Yes, but I think when you look at the numbers for Giannis, the biggest number that stands out to me is 36 minutes per game. He's got to play more, and a lot of that is foul trouble. I don't know if you guys saw the column I wrote this week about Giannis Antetokounmpo's offensive fouls committed. He's Shaq out there. Like, people don't know how to guard him in the post, and what the Heat did is brilliant. They said, look, we're not going to match him size for size, because if he turns his left shoulder and goes into Bam Adebayo, Bam's not flopping. Bam's not going down like a ton of bricks. He's going to stand there straight up and wall him off and try to defend him straight up. When you have Jay Crowder guarding him, or Andre Iguodala, or Jimmy Butler, the size advantage is so distinct. And referees, typically, when a guy gets hit in the mouth or in the neck like they've been getting hit in this series, they go down and it looks like Giannis is just being out of control. And so what they're doing is it's like a subversive defensive strategy. It's like, this guy's bigger than everybody else out there, and so we're going to go small and accentuate the contact that he has in the paint. And Giannis just isn't dominating those smaller defenders like you'd expect. Now, his numbers, on the surface are fine. They're not 45 points a game or anything like that. But the early foul trouble and the offensive fouls is critical to their success, because you don't want Giannis to be afraid to go right at Jimmy Butler, right at Jay Crowder, right at Andre Iguodala. But all those guys have picked up, offensive fouls against or charges against Giannis in this series and during the season. So that's a big part of this, is that Eric Spoelstra decided we're going to go small rather than have Bam on him. And now Bam is just roaming as a floater, kind of like what Giannis does for the Milwaukee Bucks defense. And it's just, it hasn't neutralized Giannis, but it certainly hasn't allowed him to go off for 40 or 45, 50 points like he can.
Tom, this entire thing, and I understand why it's going to fall on Giannis if they don't advance here to the Eastern Conference Finals, but how much have you seen from Mike Budenholzer in the way of mistakes where maybe some of this should fall on the coach? Because it seems like he's being outcoached by Eric Spoelstra.
He is. It's 2-0. Of course he's being outcoached right now. I think one of the things that Eric is so good at is figuring out lineups to be the aggressor and essentially say, we're going to play our way. Mike Budenholzer, for whatever reason, has decided to keep Giannis off the floor and giving him some extra breaks here down the stretch, and Chris Middleton, those two guys are your horses. You saw Kyle Lowry last night play the last 38 minutes of that game, and look what he did down the stretch. He was owning the Boston Celtics, played like 47 minutes. And you just don't see that with the Milwaukee Bucks and Mike Budenholzer. And I think, a couple more threes go down and this series might be different. But, I look at the fact that the Milwaukee Bucks outscored opponents this regular season by 762 points in the paint. Or sorry, 776 points in the paint. Outscored opponents by that much in the paint. And in this series, that total is 2. The Heat have basically played the most dominant paint team in the NBA, even in 2 games in the series. Normally we'd say after these 2 games, look, the Heat just can't stay with Giannis. They're guarding him small. They can't do these things in the paint because he's just too big. Brook Lopez and them are just too big. They're owning the paint. But the fact is that Eric Spoelstra and the Heat have played them even in the paint is a huge reason why they're up 2-0.
Tom, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate the time, sir.
You got it, guys.
So the other day, Mike Ryan asked me to ask Pat Riley about the X gesture that he has been making to Jimmy Butler. And Mike Ryan said that there were some dad vibes on Pat Riley, or even granddad vibes, because you're talking about somebody who came up at a time in this sport, okay, where he was one of the coolest things in this sport as this sport ascended. On the Hollywood sidelines of, you know, the entertainment capital of the world with Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and the Showtime Lakers. And you reach a certain age where you get the dad vibes or the granddad vibes. But what I was not expecting, and I think is happening right now, is LeBron James is giving a whole lot of dad vibes off. Now, we talked to you before about Kyrie Irving breaking away from a LeBron James partnership where LeBron James was the old head, always talking about the things he knew. And Kyrie was like, okay, I don't want that anymore. That's not, I'm going to go, I'm going to be a younger player. And I'm tired of it being LeBron's league. And you heard Stephen A. Smith report during the height of the conflict that LeBron James was very much about LeBron James, as the Milwaukee Bucks dared to do their own thing without consulting LeBron James, dared to not play the Orlando Magic without, kneeling at the knee of the king. But here is LeBron James, who has not gone zero dark 30 the way he normally does during the postseason, on social media, at least in part because of everything happening outside of the bubble, right. And he is socially minded. He's done a lot of amazing things for his people, okay? He's built a school. He has built transitional housing. He has poured millions of dollars into Muhammad Ali's African Heritage Museum. He is doing real and important things, like the Miami Heat are now training police officers. They're paying for police officers to be trained better. You've got LeBron James doing things with voting that are substantive, like actually pouring money and resources into making sure that his people are heard during this time in America. And now he is coming after, and by the way, he can be all those things and the guy who totally botched China. You don't have to choose between those things. Right. It could be he botched China and it's his worst public moment. And also he does all of these things for his people. And I understand actually, because China is all of a sudden being thrown around by people who don't actually care about Chinese human rights violations until LeBron James. They don't care at all until LeBron James points out that, hey, my people, and it doesn't feel like he's advocating for all people. It's just a convenient stance to take by people who don't care about either his people or the human rights violations in China.
In fairness to some of those people, Muhammad Ali's wife took the same stance when LeBron did not stand up for the people of China. I mean, she did. So
understood, and it's a fair criticism. But what I'm saying is it can be both things. He does a lot of great work, and on that one, he was the worst he's ever been in a public moment. But now he's going after real Jay Williams, and I want to ask Mike, as the source on who gives off dad vibes, explain to me what the bleep I got to do with this subject matter. I'm over here minding my damn business preparing for Houston. And by the way, I ain't never been nobody but my damn self. And then he puts the emoji here of a crown and then an expletive for the word feces. So Jay Williams was saying that in 2010, LeBron James wasn't himself. And LeBron James is saying, I ain't never been nobody but my damn self. And again, emoji of a crown. And I think that that emoji is what made me think dad vibes.
Yeah, the emoji, because I think you've been emojied by Pat Riley, right? He
likes the emojis.
He's a big fan of the emojis. he wasn't himself. Is he arguing that he was himself in 2010?
He is arguing that he's never been anybody.
He's always himself.
But my damn self.
I think you had 8 points in a finals game.
Exclamation point. There's a crown here.
I got JJ Barea on a switch and you refused to post him up.
That was not LeBron James. I mean, I'm sorry.
Listen to me. He ain't never been nobody but my damn self is what he's saying.
I'm the red face emoji with a bunch of like exclamation points at this point. What, he wasn't himself? What is that? That is a Mike, tame criticism. Mike, of all the criticisms, Mike, for 2010,
which part are you not understanding?
Mike's not believing him.
I ain't never been nobody but my damn self.
Well, that's a double negative.
Did he look like himself, Dan, to you? When J.J. Barea was abusing him?
I'm just,
now we're doing this show now, LeBron. You made your bed.
Yes. Yes, now we're doing this crappy show with our contractually obligated LeBron James segment.
You kept passing it right back like hot potato.
You weren't your damn self, LeBron. There I said it. I'm with Jay Williams on this in 2010 when you refused to do anything with J.J. Barea in your back pocket, and also the last 5 minutes of Game 6 when you just passed it around the perimeter scared. You were not your damn self.
You allowed someone nicknamed the custodian to get in your head.
You went into your home and became Tom Hanks in Castaway with a beard because you were wallowing in self-pity. Because you were not your damn self.
Deshaun Stevenson said he was on your level.
We remember. You got beat by Deshaun Stevenson. He's got terrible tattoos all over his body. He was the second best player for the Mavs. You know why the Heat lost? Because you were not your damn self.
Yeah.